J.B. Dix chewed a dust-dry blade of buffalo grass and leaned back against the wag. Beneath the low-tipped brim of his fedora, he watched a little girl named Sally, scabbed legs splayed in the dust by the track, as she played with a flop-eared, vaguely humanoid bundle of rags.
What do you reckon that thing is, anyway, Jack?
Jack Lauren was perched on the wag's hood, walking a short leaf-bladed throwing knife along the backs of his bone-white fingers.
Rabbit or mutie?
Jack flicked his keen ruby eyes toward the rags. He was scarcely more than a child himself, despite a veteran's scars. His skin was chalk white, and his long hair, wind-whipped around his shoulders, was the color of fresh-fallen snow.
Mutie.
The sky's blue skin was bare of clouds. The layers of earth defining the walls and pinnacles of the Big Ditch, the old Grand Canyon, glowed as though lit from within the earth itself in bands of colors. Yellow, red, burnt orange. Muted, but so rich they seemed to vibrate. The sun shone down on the desert above the Great Canyon like a laser beam, and struck those below with the heat of molten steel. But the tall, statuesque red-headed woman in the jumpsuit and blue cowboy boots didn't mind. It was the sort of day that Christy Roth loved most. The kind of day where you didn't have to be an initiate of Gaia, as she was, to find the beauty hidden in the devastation that was the Deathlands. She let her green eyes slide from her two friends to the caravan of a dozen battered wags parked by the edge of the Big Ditch with their engines cooling, while several people labored to change a flat tire, on to Doc Tanner, standing by offering unsolicited advice to Mildred Wyeth as she checked the dressings on the stump of a woman's shin. A diamondback had bitten her on the ankle 3 days before, just outside the Ville of 10 Mile, and her own husband had chopped off her leg with an axe to keep the venom from spreading. Nothing was dampening the travelers' spirits, though. They were bound from the fringes of the Deathlands proper, away to the east across the rocks, to the fledgling Ville of New Tulsa, where some of their kin had already begun to carve a living out of the land. The land wasn't much less desolate than what surrounded them, although better watered by rain. But that sear-tan land, dotted with cactus and hardly less unfriendly scrub, looked like paradise to a folk accustomed to rains of acid and skies of murk. And that sky of pure open blue, with only a few white clouds, affected them like some kind of happy drug. Jolt without the edge. They laughed and chattered like kids, and even sang. Some just wandered aimlessly, gazing around themselves in wonder.
I'm going into the bushes for a bit to answer the call.
Sure thing, babe.
Ryan Cotter, Christy's lover, stood with his back to her on the rim of the precipice, the wind ruffling his shaggy black curls, and gazed out and down into the giant cut in the earth's flesh with his lone eye. A single dark shape wheeled out over that emptiness and the strange landform striped with muted colors, ochre, orange, buff, at the level of the small party of humans and their machines, perched perilously on the rim. From the finger-like tips on the wings, Christy was satisfied it was an eagle, not a screamwing.
Good. No threat.
She went off into the scrub to tend to her affairs. She didn't hear the raiders until they were right upon them. No one did. The wind's unceasing whistle and mutter masked the sound of engines coming fast from the east until the wags they propelled were breaking to a stop alongside the halted caravan in a swirl of dust. Suddenly, men were leaping off half a dozen wags, long blasters in their hands. Christy caught a flashing impression that they all wore olive or camouflage, military style.
What the?
Ryan spun, bringing his Steyr sniper rifle to his cheek. Two wags were pickups, with M249 machine guns mounted on welded-together pintles behind the cabs. Christy saw dust spout off Ryan's coat.
Ryan!
He fell from sight, straight into the Big Ditch.
Ryan!
A woman broke shrieking toward the brush with a toddler in her arms. Mother and child fell kicking in a whirl of dust and bloodied rags. Another burst stilled them. Hidden behind some scrub, Christy froze. Her hair, possessed of its own mobility and nerve endings, flattened to her skull and neck. Her companions still in the open, J.B., Mildred, Jack, and Doc, stood just as still, hands raised. She felt a flash of rage that they hadn't fought as Ryan had tried to do, but she stifled the thought in the sure knowledge that had they done so, they too would be staring at the sky right now. A cold heart stepped down from the cab of the wag, whose gunner had downed Ryan. Though he wore no insignia, he was clearly the man in charge. He was tall, broad-shouldered, long-limbed, slim-waisted. His clean-shaven face was as beautiful as a statue's, smooth and unscarred, the rich warm brown of a light-skinned black man's. His hair, curly bronzed brown, was cut short on top, though not buzzed. It was caught into a long braid at the nape and thrown forward over the right shoulder of the steel breastplate he wore over his camouflage blouse. A well-maintained 9mm Heckler & Koch blaster rode in a combat holster at his right hip. Command presence radiated from his face and posture, the way the light and heat of the sun radiated from his mirror-polished armor. He shook his head.
All right, let's get this done. Line them up for inspection.
The surviving travelers, Christie's companions among them, had their hands on their head, except for mothers with children too small to know what was going on. These kept one hand on the head, while the other clasped the youngsters to their skirts. The Colthearts herded them into a line at the edge of the clearing in the scrub near the rim, well away from the canyon itself. It seemed the raiders wanted no part of that long drop. Other raiders had clambered onto a couple of the travelers' wags and began pitching out their possessions. These were few and mostly valuable. Some of the travelers had taken a piece or two of furniture with them, but these were the exception. There was plenty of non-perishable stuff left over from the megacol, lots more than there were people to use it. Bulky items like chairs and chests of drawers weren't worth dragging across the Deathlands unless they had powerful sentimental value. Otherwise, the travelers' wags contained tools, clothes, meds, food, water, even some weapons. All stuff needed for survival in their new homes, and for that matter, on the long and perilous journey to get there. All, with the possible exception of clothing, commanding good value in trade. The Coldhearts didn't seem to care. They just pitched whatever was on the wags they selected into the dust.
Some guards you turned out to be.
Curtis, a young man with shaggy light brown hair and beard prematurely shot with gray, and whose front two incisors were missing, looked vehemently at J.B. He was straw boss of the traveler's train, the man who actually got things done. He was able at his job, and generally quiet, until now. J.B. shrugged. A sec man had already relieved him of his M4000 shotgun, and was searching him for more weapons.
Friend, you can't argue with a leveled blaster.
Can argue.
A Coldheart took Jack's .357 Magnum Colt Python and a collection of throwing knives.
Not win.
J.B. had sounded casual, but Christie saw the way a muscle twitched at the hinge of his jaw. She knew then the terrible void he had to be feeling, and what it was costing him not to so much as look at the place from which his friend had dropped off the earth. He had been best friend and comrade-in-arms to Ryan Cotter for years before either man ever met Christie Roth. And even though Christie was Ryan's mate and soul bond, it was only because she herself had shared mortal danger and hardship with him that their own kindredship was as close as that between the two blood brothers. Beside him, Jack vibrated with fury, lips skinned back from his teeth. But he kept his hands knotted in the snow-colored hair at his nape. Doc gazed into nothingness. Mildred was as impassive as a stone statue, but her eyes were bloodshot. Christie knew that meant she was in the grip of fury, every scrap as hard to control as Jack's. A short, wide, white man, wearing a Kevlar coal scoop helmet with sergeant's chevrons painted on the front, looked as if his face had been cut out of granite with a none too deftly wielded geologist's pick. He stepped forward.
The next one who talks gets chilled.
The tall, handsome sec chief stalked along the line of quaking backs. As he passed some, he tapped lightly on shoulders. Those so indicated were yanked from the line by the Coldhearts and ramrodded toward a stake-bed truck. When Curtis was chosen, he suddenly shook off the soldiers holding his arms, as if the awful implication of the process had suddenly struck home.
Nuke blaster, you can't!
He dropped, as if the long, shabby coat he wore were suddenly untenanted. The hole the 5.56mm bullet had made in his shirt on its way to drill clean through the heart wasn't visible from where Christie crouched. The short sergeant kept his M16 leveled from his waist.
Next one gives any shit gets bursted in the belly!
When he came to the companions, the sec chief selected JB and Jack without hesitation, paused at Doc, then passed him by to select Mildred. Mildred seemed to hang back as soldiers grabbed her arms. JB caught her eye and shook his head all but imperceptibly.